This week, December 17th, 2013, on The Digital Story. Lightroom 5.3 goodies. On the Nibelosity Report, automated backup of your mobile photos with Loom. From the Photo Help Desk, using your car windshield screen as a portrait reflector. All of this and more with yours truly, Derek Story, on The Digital Story. Welcome back to another Digital Story. We're going to start out today with Lightroom 5.3 because it has a lot of new stuff, and especially for, you know, a relatively minor release. If you're shooting with a new camera, especially Olympus shooters, then you're probably going to be interested in what Adobe's been up to. And I'm going to cover that in some detail in our first segment today. And then I'm also going to get into automated mobile photo backup on the Nibelosity Report, because 2014 is right around the corner and we want to have something in place, right? Going into the new year, I've lost Everpix and maybe Loom will work. So we'll take a closer look at Loom. And then, of course, I have a tip on the Photo Help Desk. We have our virtual camera club business and more goodies than you can shake a stick at. So let's get going with Lightroom 5.3. Let me just kind of give you the overview here. Now, if you're a Lightroom 5 user, if you already have Lightroom 5, this is a free update. And there's lots going on here. First of all, they have updated the raw compatibility for a number of cameras, lots and lots of cameras. They list them all out. I'll put a link to the notes that gives you all the information that's going on with this update. But of particular interest will be photographers who are shooting with the new OMD EM1, the Olympus Stylus 1, the Nikon DF, or the Pentax K3. All of those are now supported in Lightroom 5.3, and at the moment, and I underline at the moment, and are not supported in Aperture 3.5, I believe, is where we are with Aperture. If you want to use the RAW files from these new cameras, Lightroom is going to be the way to go at this particular time. But there's more than that. And, you know, the raw support thing is a seesaw. So in the end, almost everybody supports all the major cameras. A lot of times it's just a timing thing. But there are other goodies in this Lightroom update that make it worthy of being a story on today's podcast. Another feature that was added is tethered capture for the Canon Rebel T4i. So if you're shooting with a Rebel T4i, you can now actually do tethered capture with Lightroom 5.3. That's added to the list of cameras that can already do tethered capture with this application. They've also added new lens profile support for 19 lenses, I believe. And a lot of those lenses are the new Sony glass. So if you're a Sony NEX shooter or Sony Alpha shooter, there's going to be stuff in here for you. And the lens profile corrections are very nice. It's one of the features that we have in Lightroom that we don't have in Aperture that allows for software lens correction in post-production. And what Adobe does, they load the lens profiles into the application. And if you want to enable the profile for your particular lens, and there's a whole lot of them in there, including the iPhone 5, for example, then you can do that. If you like the improvement or the change that it makes to the photo, a lot of times it removes a little distortion, then you can keep it. If you don't like it, you can just turn it off. It's kind of a neat thing to have. And there are 19 new lenses in this update, this 5.3 update. Now, the thing that I really like that was added in this particular version, and it's kind of a small thing, it's as you look at what's going on with Lightroom 5.3, down near the end of the post, you know, the list of features, you'll see added camera matching color profiles for Olympus cameras. And it's almost all the modern Olympus cameras that are included here. The OMD, the Pens, the Stylus, they're all in there. And what that means is that now you have the color profiles, the Olympus ones, natural, muted, portrait, and vivid as options when you're doing your post-processing. Now, this is in the develop module. Prior to this update, all Olympus shooters had was just the Adobe color profile, which is quite good. Don't get me wrong. You know, I actually used it quite happily. But having the camera profiles are really a nice touch. And what I like to do with them, let's say that I'm looking at a landscape shot that I took with the Olympus OMD. So I can go down to the color profiles in the develop module there. And the default will be the Adobe color profile. But then I can look at the four Olympus profiles too, the natural, the muted, the portrait, and the vivid. And it really does give you four additional different looks to the shot. I think the thing about it is that sometimes when I look at these profiles, I'll do it early on in the image editing process, it will give me some idea of where I want to start with this image. Because you just get to look at these four different color profiles. I think they're really nice. I'm really happy to see them in Lightroom 5.3. There's something that I like, and there's something that I think a lot of times are overlooked. Now, I've been using them for Canon for some time, and I'm really happy that I'll be able to also have them for my Olympus cameras. Then, of course, we have the usual array of bug fixes, and there are quite a few, actually, in this update. So if there's something that's been nagging you with Lightroom 5.2, hopefully this baby will fix that also. So that brings us to then, you know, where does this application stand in our photo management world? Well, if you're already using Lightroom, I think, you know, obviously 5.3 is going to be a welcome update because you're getting all sorts of new goodies, and it keeps you modern with everything else that's going on in the camera world, especially if you have new gear. If you're not a Lightroom user, I think when they make an update like this, where you have all sorts of new RAW file support, we have all sorts of new lens support, then it makes it very tempting to add it to your arsenal here, to your photo management arsenal, even if it's not your full-time editor. If you like iPhoto, if you like Aperture, if you like some other photo management app, you can still go ahead and use them. I use Aperture primarily for my photo management because I really like the way it organizes stuff. But I'm also shooting with an Olympus EM1, and there are times when I want to be able to process RAW files and not just shoot JPEGs, and Lightroom 5.3 comes in very handy for that. So I have it. I can process RAW files. If I want to go ahead and output those processed files and then move them into Aperture, I can. Or I can just leave the JPEGs in Aperture and leave the RAW files in Lightroom. It's sort of up to how you want to keep track of things. There's always this thing where people want to go, you know, one or the other. Well, I'm using Aperture, but Lightroom looks really good, and should I switch to Lightroom? Or I'm using whatever, and should I switch to whatever? You don't have to choose one over the other. You need a primary system for managing your photos, whatever that happens to be. And then you can use other tools, ancillary tools, for certain situations. So just because, for example, on this podcast where I talk about Lightroom 5.3 and you're not using it, it doesn't mean you have to switch to Lightroom. But what it does mean is that you might want to consider Lightroom in certain situations when you're working with certain cameras. And in that case, I think this is a great tool to have in your photo arsenal, especially if you're someone that upgrades to the newer models of cameras all the time and you're not maybe getting the support for a model or two with your other application. Okay, second story, the Nimbulosity report. Automated backup of your mobile photos with Loom. Okay, so we're near the end of 2013 here. Now, my solution for 2013, Everpix, has gone, well, it's gone the way of the dinosaur, quite honestly. So I have PhotoStream in place, And I have a couple other little things that I do to back up my photos. But I really want that one cloud location where photos from my iPad and my iPhone automatically go into, and that I can access them from my devices, from my computer, from my iPad, and from my iPhone. And so I like having that ancillary thing. And as you know, if you listen to my podcasts over the years, I like redundancy. And I also like redundancy that's fun to use. So I've been looking for something to replace EverPix. And right now, what I'm settling on for the moment, I'll make my final decision at the end of December. I still got a little bit more time. But let's say my leading candidate right now is an application, a service actually, called Loom, L-O-O-M. And I have a link to it in the show notes on thedigitalstory.com. In the show notes there, story number 2, Loom. It has a very good iOS app that works fine on the iPhone and works fine on the iPad. On the Mac, what you do is there is a Loom application, but it's mainly an upload manager. This is where you get to set, and this is similar to what you could do with EverPix too, where you could choose iPhoto albums, libraries, I should say, or folders that whenever pictures are added to those libraries or folders, they automatically get uploaded to Loom. That's what the application for the Mac does primarily. It manages that stuff. It lets you turn on and off libraries and folders that will automatically get uploaded to the cloud service. If you want to actually work with your pictures, then you use web access. You go through the browser. I've been going through Safari. And you go to the Loom website, you log in, and then all your stuff is there. Now, on the iOS devices, the app, the Loom app that you download, it manages everything. So you manage uploading, and you also can view all of the stuff that you have. Now, it's interesting. I think that managing my pictures that I've been testing so far with Loom is easier with the iOS devices than it is with the web interface. And maybe not easier, but faster. It just seems faster. The web interface has seemed a little slow to me. And, you know, I always got to give a little gray area here because you never know. It could be time of day, it could da-da-da. And a week from now, everything may be just fine. But in my initial testing anyway, the iOS apps have worked better. You get 5 gigabytes of free storage online. Now, that's not a ton of free storage, but it's certainly enough to test the service to see if you're going to like it or not and test it for a period of time. I mean, we're capturing JPEGs with our iPhones and our iPads. So, you know, 5 gigabytes is going to give you a lot of operating room, and you can get additional free storage, similar to Dropbox, by referring friends. And then if you want, you can also purchase additional storage. You can get 50 gigabytes of additional storage for $3.99 a month, $3.99 a month, or 250 gigabytes for $9.99 a month. And if you pay annually instead of monthly, they'll give you a discount. So for the additional 50 gigabytes, it'll be $39.99 a year. And for the additional 250 gigabytes, it'd be $99.99 annually. So you can buy additional storage and really have probably enough for your mobile photos for sure, for your JPEG work and so forth. If you're a heavy, heavy photographer shooting a lot of RAW files, probably not the service. But I don't frame it as that kind of service. I really frame Loom as something for our on-the-go mobile photography. Those shots that often kind of fall through the cracks, you know, our backup cracks. There must be a better way to say that. But, you know, like, for instance, when we do a shoot with our DSLR or Micro Four Thirds camera, you know, with portraits and landscapes and all that sort of stuff, then we usually have a workflow that plugs into, including backup. When we're out having fun and we're just taking pictures with our iPhone or our iPad, those are the shots that sometimes don't get moved on to, you know, backup solutions. And I think that's where Loom comes in. Loom will help us with those sort of shots, because remember, the best backup is the one that you don't have to think about, the one that just happens. Now, I like PhotoStream. You know, I use iCloud and PhotoStream for my stuff. But remember, it only holds 1,000 photos, and then they start to fall off. And so then you have to have something on the other end to catch them. In my case, I'm using iPhoto on the Mac to catch my PhotoStream stuff, and then it lives on a computer. But I want something that I also don't have to think about. You know, I do have to do a little bit of management there. I have to remember to launch iPhoto. I have to back up that library every now and then. I have to do things. I'm not complaining. I'm just saying I have to do things. Whereas with Loom or whatever service I end up picking, I don't want to have to think about it. I just want my mobile photos to go to this place from all directions, from any mobile device that I'm using. I can enable Loom on it, and then be able to view them from any device also, including my computer. Now, we're still dealing with pros here. Now, here's the thing that I think separates Loom from something else that I've used cloud service-wise, is that it allows me to create albums. I can create albums for my pictures, and I can either move the pictures off the timeline. You know, when everything goes in, it goes into like a timeline, which is the logical way to do it. Everything's there. So I can either move photos out of the timeline into these albums that I create, or I can copy them into the albums. I can do either way and leave everything in the timeline. Now, when I do this, this only happens on the Loom service. If I'm moving pictures around and doing things, everything is still on my iPhone. Everything is still on my iPad. The thing is, if I have Loom automatically backing things up, then if I decide to take pictures off, let's say for, to create a little bit more room on my flash storage, I don't have to worry that I'm actually getting rid of them forever. I'm just taking them off my device. They're already backed up in the cloud. But having this album thing is kind of neat, and I've been playing with it. I have my 2013 photos, and not a whole lot, which is kind of nice to start with, because I just got the iPhone 5S, and I got the iPad mini Retina display. Both are relatively new devices, so they didn't have a ton of photos on them. They have more than I would think, but not a whole year's worth anyway. And so it was good practice for me to kind of organize them using the service. So I created albums, and I did my usual categories: people, 2013, places, 2013, events, 2013, things, 2013, and then plants and animals, 2013. Those are categories that I use in Aperture and anywhere else that I'm doing organization. So I created those albums on Loom, and I've been moving stuff off the timeline into them, and I'm actually moving them so that way I can just go to those categories. And I like it, and I've been doing it on the iPhone and on the iPad, and it works really well. I think they've done a pretty good job with the interface. So being able to have that organization, I think, is pretty good stuff. Now, in the con area, I believe right now it is only Mac only. I think a Windows client is coming, although you have the web interface on Windows, but the automatic upload. And I have to double check this, but I'm not sure that there's an Android version of the app yet. And if you go to the website, you know, obviously that all will be right there. And then the other thing I'll say, and that I mentioned earlier, is that it performs well, I think, on the iOS devices. To me, it's still a little sluggish in the web browser. And, you know, take that with a grain of salt, because who knows? Now, one of the reasons why it may perform so well on the iOS devices is that behind the scenes, under the hood, what Loom is doing is that they're sending you optimized versions for, you know, the different ways that you're accessing your library. The master files are still in there, but if you're accessing them via an iPhone, you're going to get a version that's optimized for the iPhone. That probably explains why they load so well, is that Loom is doing this under the hood. Now, remember, your original photos are protected and you can get to them, but I do like the idea of optimizing the flow of photos for the different devices. I think that it makes performance good, and performance indeed is good on both the iPad and the iPhone. So is this the solution for 2014? Well, I think it's a leading candidate right now. I'm going to keep working with it. I'll probably do an update here either at the end of this month or the early January. But for the moment, I think Loom is going to be it for 2014. I'll give it a go. I haven't upgraded yet. Haven't quite figured. I want to figure out my strategy for that and see how it goes. And remember, you can upgrade any time. So you can go ahead and ride along with your 5 gigabytes until you actually need some more space. But the bottom line here is that we're going into a new year. You might want to come up with something so that your mobile pictures get the same amount of attention when it comes to backup and archiving as your master files do from your DSLR and from your Micro Four Thirds camera. Third story. Okay, today on the Photo Help Desk, I have a fun one for you today, a photo tip from Photo Help Desk. By the way, Photo Help Desk is at photohelpdesk.com, photohelpdesk.com. So anyway, I was reminded of this tip while I was working on an article for Macworld Magazine about taking portraits with your iPhone. And, you know, outside, you know, the thing about the iPhone is, the flash, the LED flash, works fairly well indoors. It doesn't have a great reach, but in low-light environments, it does a pretty good job. When you go outside and try to use that LED flash on your iPhone in bright sunlight as a fill flash, it's just not strong enough. And believe me, I have tried and I have tried, and underexposed subject every time. So you need something a little bit stronger when you're outside if you're shooting with a mobile device and you don't have that nice flash on your bigger camera. So, you know, obviously a lot of times what we do is that we're using reflectors, and we carry in our big camera kits these disc reflectors that are collapsible, and they work terrific. But, you know, if you're shooting with your iPhone, chances are you don't have a photographic disc reflector with you. That'd just be kind of weird, right? Oh, I've got my iPhone and I've got my reflector. No. Okay. So, but what you may have, and especially if you're, you know, driving around in your car and, you know, doing, you know, your life kind of stuff, is that you might have a window shade in your car. And, you know, in, at least here in California, we use these things all the time in the summer because it gets hot. And if you put a shade, you know, in your front windshield, helps keep the car from getting smoking hot, and especially that steering wheel from, you know, burning, branding the inside of your hands when you grab it. So, you know, we have these and, you know, it's interesting the way they design these windshield shades. Typically, they'll be shiny on one side, like, you know, silver color on one side. And then a lot of times they'll be white on the inside. And you can, you know, use either side. Well, these things make great reflectors for photography. When you have a bit of an overcast day or a semi-cloudy day, you can use the silver side of your window shade. That bounces more light back up into your subject. And when it's bright out, the silver is probably going to be a little too intense, we're going to blind your photo subject, but you can use the white side and it works pretty well in bright conditions. And this goes even when you're doing a self-portrait. And actually the shot that I ran in the Macworld magazine article, it's not out yet, by the way, I just turned it in and the editors are doing their thing on it. But the shot that I ran is actually the subject is taking a picture of herself with the iPhone and she's holding the reflector out with one arm where it's reflecting on the offside. And that's the way you use it. If you've got the sun over one shoulder, let's say you have the sun coming over your right shoulder, then you hold the reflector in your left hand so that the sun is bouncing off the reflector and bouncing onto the other side of your face. It works remarkably well. These things work great. And like I said, chances are you probably have one in your car right now. And I just want to bring it up as part of the third segment today because this is one of those things where suddenly, you know, you want to take a shot outside and you only have your iPhone with you and you can't, the fill flash isn't working and you're going, I just can't get what I want. Remember, if you've got that window shade in your car, go grab it or have someone go grab it for you, bring it out. Boom, baby, you have something. And, you know, when they drop down, they're fairly long, right? They're like 3 feet long or so. You've got something where you can do, reflection for half a body length, or you can wrap it around under the person. I mean, you can do all sorts of things with these. They're really handy. They don't cost hardly anything. And even if you don't have one in your car right now because you live somewhere where you don't think you need it, spend $5, get one, stash it in your car. Not only will you have a car windshield shade when it gets hot, but you'll have a really cool reflector that will draw the admiration of all those around you next time you want to do a portrait with your iPhone or even with your regular camera. They work great then. So that is the photo help desk tip of the week, using your car windshield shade as a reflector for portraits. Try it. It sounds weird now as I'm talking to you. I know. But it works and it's really cool. Really cool stuff. Okay, let's take care of a little virtual camera club business. Photo assignment for this month is high ISO. Photo assignment for December. And I'm thinking ISO 1600 or above. Anywhere in there will qualify. We're getting some fun stuff right now. And if you want to participate, just if you haven't done so already, just go to the member info page. It'll tell you how to do it. But basically, you send me an email attachment. And, you know, you put the photo assignment in there, put high ISO in the subject line. Don't strip out the metadata. I don't know. You know, this is so funny. I am really surprised at how many pictures come into the photo assignment and all the metadata is gone. Your name isn't in there. Your copyright isn't in there. The camera info is stripped out. What are you guys doing? Why are you doing that? It must not be intentional, right? Because why would you, you know, strip out all that information? If you leave it in there, then it'll show up in the photo gallery and people can see what camera you used and what settings you did and, you know, and anything else that you put in there. So, you know, don't strip it out. Leave it in there. It's fun for people not only to see the photos in our photo assignment gallery, but also the information that goes with it. So anyway, you just got to send that to me by the end of the month. Now, one of those shots will be the Sizzle Picks pick of the month, and that person will get a free Sizzle Picks. A free Sizzle Picks, absolutely. The Retina display that you can hang on your wall. Not only do you get the benefit of being acknowledged as one of the best images in the gallery for the month, for all the people that participated, your award, right, your trophy is a free Sizzle Picks that you can put on the wall. It will look great, right, because it's a good photo. And you have bragging rights. Yep, that's the shot that I won the December 2013 photo assignment on the digital story. That's a trophy in addition to being a work of art. Sponsored by Sizzle Picks, SIZZLPIX at sizzlepicks.com. They have a tile on all the pages of the digital story. Great supporters of the website, and they make fantastic output that you can hang on the wall, admire, and brag about to all of your friends. Also, Red River paper, and I've been doing a lot of printing lately, so I'm very familiar with a lot of the different stocks. I really love Arctic Polar Luster right now. It's one of the surfaces that I've been using a lot. But I'm also running some matte paper through the Epson R2400. I have an R2400 story to tell. I'm not going to tell it right now. I was going to use it as a journal entry on the Nimble Photographer. I hope you're following the journal over at thenimblephotographer.com. But anyway, the R2400 is my black and white printer, and I think it just does great. And it's had some issues lately. But the issues haven't been with the paper. The paper's been great. It's the darn printer. But I've been running a couple different fine art surfaces from Red River paper through there. And I tell you, oh, just so beautiful to hold these things in your hand when they come out. Red River paper, they give you top quality paper at about 40% discount because they make the paper and they sell the paper. It comes directly from them. There's no middleman, and they pass that savings along to you. And finally today, I actually got two other little notes. One is I want to let you know, those of you that are interested in the San Francisco Street Shooting Photography Workshop coming up in the spring of 2014, this Friday I'm going to check out the final candidates for our hotel. And the conference room and the rooms will be there and the whole deal. And we have five candidates right now. Leah has been doing a great job on working with all these different hotels, trying to get us the best deal possible. So we take our walking tour this Friday, all five of them, and then I want to make a decision after that. And then those of you that are on the reserve list, you'll get your notifications with the final details and a chance to actually sign up for the workshop. This is exciting stuff. I have to tell you, we're not doing like the Holiday Inn or the Hyatt, you know, something where you could be anywhere. The hotels that we're going to be working out of are like so San Francisco. There's nothing like them anywhere else. And the minute you walk into them, you know you're in San Francisco. So more to report on that, but I just wanted to give you a little teaser that we're on the home stretch of making our final decision for our location for that workshop coming up in the spring. And of course, if you're interested in our workshops, all you got to do is go to the workshops page on the Digital Story. It's right there at the top at thedigitalstory.com. You'll see workshops. And last but not least, if you're doing some last-minute holiday shopping and you're using Amazon or B&H, if you would just go to the Digital Story first, go to the second column. About halfway down the page, you'll see Add Tile for Amazon, Add Tile for B&H. Click on that first and then go over to the site. Doesn't matter, you know, if they take you to a specific camera or something, you just go to where you want then. And that helps support the site, which is a good thing. Keeps the podcast on the air. All right, that's going to do it for me today. I'll tell you, there was a lot of wacky stuff going on in the background during today's show. I had to stop it about 8 times. Had sirens, had little screaming girls outside, had cat feeding machines, had all sorts of stuff, but we got through it. It might be a little raw in some places, but, you know, the energy is there. All right, I will see you next week. I've got some terrific topics on tap, more to report. Come back. In the meantime, think about what you're going to do for backup. 2014 is going to be here before we know it. All right, bye-bye now.
Your questions and comments, email them to questions@thedigitalstory.com. For show notes, web blogs, and informative articles, visit thedigitalstory.com. We'll see you next time on The Digital Story.